What works for men to optimize their biology is unlikely to always work for women. So I want to break down the male pattern first, then we'll get into the female infrating rhythm. The first thing that men need to know is that the key magical thing that you need to make sure you're doing in order to unlock your wellness. I know everybody's like, what is it? Joe's like, tell me.
Welcome to the Spartan Up Podcast with Joe DeSena, founder and CEO of Spartan Race.
We are talking about overcoming obstacles. The same way we teach people to get over obstacles on the course, we will teach you here on the Spartan Up Podcast to get over obstacles in your mind.
Today, hormone expert Elisa Beatty tells Joe how men can use circadian rhythms to amplify testosterone, about the new study that changes how women should think about intermittent fasting and HIIT workouts, and about how your hormones can amplify your performance.
This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Inside Tracker, the ultra-personalized nutrition and wellness platform that analyzes data from your blood. Go to InsideTracker.com and save 33% with the code SPARTANUP.
All right, Joe DeSena here for Spartan Up Podcast, CEO and founder, and I've got Elisa Beatty. We're doing a podcast with. I guess I found you. Somebody sent me an email or a text said you have to talk to this woman. She knows everything about female hormones and endocrine systems and nutrition. And I said, okay, I guess that makes sense. But maybe we could apply some of this to men also. Not that we don't have, we're about 45% female, 55% male across the globe when it comes to Spartan, about 7 million Spartans, and they all have endocrine systems.
Listen, we all have hormones, and men and women have to understand the science of their chronobiology in order to optimize their metabolism. So we'll definitely, for the men listening, you're going to learn a lot about the timing of things to optimize everything that you're trying to achieve with your fitness beyond just the typical kind of stuff. So yes, biohacking for both genders, but my specialty, of course, is really helping women optimize their metabolisms, understanding their biological rhythms.
I see, for those watching, I see you read a lot of books.
Well, actually, all the books I read are on this side. This is my stockpile of my new book that my publisher had sent. So it makes a nice background.
Tell me about the book.
First one is Woman Code, and that was published in 2013. And that's a book that helps women who have any sort of existing period problems. So if they're suffering with PCOS or fibroids or endometriosis, and you're looking for a way to recalibrate your endocrine function from the root causal level, the Woman Code book has this now well-loved and well-known flow protocol that I created to help you do that. And my company, Flow Living, is the first digital healthcare platform that's dedicated to really improving women's hormonal healthcare and making living with hormonal issues and dealing with them simple and easy to do, because it already feels confusing and overwhelming as it is. And, you know, I just thought we needed a brand that was going to help us do that. My second book, In the Flow, just came out in January. And this is the first book to ever describe this special biological rhythm that women only have in their reproductive years, called the infradian rhythm, which I know we're going to talk a lot about today. And it presents my really unique, some people call it revolutionary, method for women to optimize their metabolism, their fitness, and their lives as a whole by really aligning with this infradian rhythm. And that's called the cycle syncing method.
I love it. But why should we believe you? How did you grow up different from, let's say, my wife or my sister or my daughters? That, like, what, how do you know all this stuff?
Well, I'm not sure what exactly is different about me versus your wife or your daughter. But what I can say is that I went through an early experience of having a hormonal crisis at a young age. So all of my pubescent years from 12 to 22, I menstruated only 6 times, two of which were chemically induced with synthetic progesterone. And I went undiagnosed for 7 years with a menstrual disorder called polycystic ovarian syndrome. And I had access to the best trained Harvard. And then when I was at Hopkins to become an OBGYN, Hopkins trained gynecologist taking care of me, and no one knew what was wrong with me. And my symptoms kept getting worse. From, you know, I tipped the scales at 210 pounds. I was covered face, chest, and back in cystic acne. As I mentioned, no menstruation, had mental health side effects from all this hormonal disruption, anxiety, depression, insomnia. It was completely interfering with my quality of life and my ability to be a healthy young female. And so what does a young girl do, a young woman do when she can't, you know, Friday nights when she can't sleep and she's obese and acneic? Well, she's in the library trying to research at Hopkins what could be wrong with her. And I did discover an article in an obstetrics journal that described Stein-Leventhal disorder and read the symptomology and saw that it in fact aligned with exactly what I was presenting with. So I went to my gynecologist the very next morning without an appointment, as the famous story goes. And I said, listen, we've got to do a couple of tests. I'm highly suspect that that this is what I have. And we did all the testing and she confirmed my diagnosis. And that was a very pivotal moment, because in that moment, I saw a couple things. But what happened next was that she said, yes, you do have PCOS. And I said, great, what do we do? She said, there's nothing we can do for you. We cannot cure you. You'll get progressively worse. All the symptoms you have now will likely turn into diabetes, heart disease, infertility, et cetera. We'll just medicate you to deal with those symptoms along the way. And I just thought two things. One, I can't believe that this is the best that we have for women like me. And two, there are millions and millions of women struggling with hormonal issues. And I just became really passionate about obviously getting this addressed for myself. And I promised myself that if I could conclude successful research to put together protocol using functional nutrition methodology to help reboot my endocrine system, that I would then build a platform to help other women navigate these hormonal issues more easily, with less isolation, with less delay. And that is sort of my origin story and how I got started in all of this, you know, long before functional medicine had even a name.
Yeah, and it is terrible, right? That, I mean, how much of the cure, because you look very fit and healthy right now.
Thanks.
How much of the cure was driven by nutrition?
100%.
So it's
and fun. I also want to make clear that, you know, cure is a controversial word. I think that when you are someone who has the disposition or the genetic predisposition or lifestyle tendencies or historical tendencies to develop hormone imbalances, that you want to think about long-term remission, but be conscious that if you were to, let's say, revert to dietary and lifestyle habits that would trigger or disrupt your endocrine function in any way, that you should plan on seeing those symptoms crop back up over time. So it's really about remission. And, you know, whether you feel that remission for a long period of time is a cure, that's your personal choice. But, you know, remission is the name of the game.
It's really upsetting to me that there's not more time spent on proper nutrition in the medical field. Like, it's pretty rare that you meet a doctor, right? Certainly a traditional doctor, male or female, that's giving you nutritional advice. I remember my dad was in one of the top heart hospitals, and I couldn't believe after surgeries what food was available to him. Why is that?
I think that it really just comes down to what is being taught to doctors. And, you know, there was an interesting study done actually. First year residents, when they were surveyed, really believed before their medical education and training that nutrition played an enormous role. 80% of those first year residents believed that nutrition played an enormous role in the health of a patient. Then when you resurveyed those same physicians in their third year, they only believed that it was a factor that was like 20% of your health was dictated by nutrition. So I think it's just that, you know, that study is old now, you know, at least 10 or 20 years. But I do think that younger doctors now who are growing up in a wellness environment and in a wellness conversation probably bring a lot more sensitivity and sensibility about nutrition to the conversation, just naturally on their own. But I do think it would be great if the training, you know, expanded for medical students to really include an experience of that nutritional overview.
Yeah, I was lucky. My mom in the 1970s found health and wellness before it was cool and hip. But if she hadn't, how would you know that Velveeta cheese or a Twinkie was, you know what I mean? Like, you just assume if they're selling it, it must be okay. The endocrine system, just for everybody that's out there listening, that is, correct me if I'm wrong, our system that connects hormones to the blood. Is that the right, or to organs, or?
Well, we can refine that a bit, right? So it's the concert of organs. It's a system of organs and glands that runs it from the brain all the way down to the ovaries or the testes. And along the way, these organs and glands communicate with each other via hormones, right? Think of hormones as chemical messengers that are having a specific conversation with these different organs and glands. And what are they trying to communicate? Well, they're trying to communicate if you need to make more of a particular hormone, right? And that the body does that, the endocrine system does that with a negative biofeedback loop. The pituitary gland and the hypothalamus are sort of scanning blood serum levels of these hormones and seeing if you need to make more of them or less. And it sends out stimulating or inhibiting, you know, hormones to help your body keep those levels regulated. And so that's sort of how it works at a high level. What its most important job is, the endocrine system, we think about it in relationship to sex hormones most often, but actually the most important thing, and for any Star Trek fans, the prime directive of your endocrine system is to safeguard the transport of glucose to the brain, the heart, and the muscle tissue. If you do anything dietarily or lifestyle-wise that disrupts, makes difficult, interferes with your endocrine system's job of getting that sugar to your brain, your heart, and your muscle tissue, it will quickly go out of balance by trying to overcompensate for what you are doing unknowingly to disrupt this very important process. Because you can imagine if your brain and your heart, let's just say, didn't have enough glucose to function, things would go sideways pretty quickly.
That is the main purpose. What are the most common mistakes we make, especially in this country, where that disrupt that?
Don't worry, we'll be back to the interview in just a minute. But first, a quick note about Inside Tracker, this week's podcast sponsor. Spartans, if you listened to last week's episode of the show, you heard Joe tell Inside Tracker founder Dr. Gil Blander about how he uses Inside Tracker to optimize his own health. It lets him see when diet, sleep, and exercise changes are really working. Inside Tracker is a tool for Spartans like you to access the information your blood holds so you can optimize your training and nutrition, and maybe even see if you bleed Spartan. Both Spartan and Inside Tracker are on a mission to help you get healthier and live longer, better lives. Inside Tracker's patented system will transform your body's data into knowledge, insights, and a customized action plan with science-backed recommendations. To find out more, go to InsideTracker.com, and you can save 33% with the code SpartanUp.
What are the most common mistakes we make, especially in this country, where that disrupt that?
Well, I think it's small things like having caffeine on an empty stomach. There's a new study that shows that doing that actually is definitively hormonally disruptive for your blood sugar for a full 24 hours. So if you're going to do caffeine, even if you're upgrading it, you got to do it after a meal and use it as a digestive aid. Skipping meals or going too long between meals. In fact, there was another study just out, a gold standard study, placebo study as well, talking about how intermittent fasting does not actually work as a weight loss tool. It can be very disruptive to blood sugar levels and cholesterol levels. And instead of burning fat, you burn muscle, turns out. So, and this is true for men or women. And then there's bigger things like endocrine disruptive chemicals that you might be exposed to in, let's say, your food, if you're not choosing always organic foods or as many as possible, or what you're putting on your skin, which is your largest organ. So, you know, if you don't feel like you can understand the ingredients or you wouldn't feel comfortable, quote unquote, having a scoop of it in, to eat, you might not want to put it on your skin or your hair or fragrance or deodorant, makeup for women. I mean, the statistics around how much chemical load newborn babies have as a result of fetal exposure to chemicals from makeup products is astounding. So that's just what the baby's absorbing, and then what you're absorbing is even more. So, you know, and then there's the environmental stuff. You know, if you have a lawn and you're using, you know, pesticides to address your lawn care, all of those things are exposures that you can have a lot of control over. And all of these chemicals are known endocrine disruptors and potential carcinogens. And so it's really important that you do your part as part of the, when I say lifestyle changes, to really remove as many endocrine disruptors as is practical for you, you know, keeping in mind that we have a lot of pollution that we can't control, but whatever you can do with your own personal choices makes an enormous difference in your body's ability to function normally. And just to put it in a little perspective, young girls for years, they were tracking the fact that young girls were developing precocious puberty, meaning starting puberty too early. You know, puberty is really supposed to really kick off at 12 and 13. And because of all these endocrine disruptive chemicals that have been introduced into the food supply, into products, and into the environment, young girls, because they have these chemicals have an estrogenic effect in the body, they were being stimulated to start puberty as young as 9. Right? So we're talking about breast development and menstruation as early as 9. This has enormous health negative health impacts over the span of that person's life. And we kind of let that go. And then some studies have shown now conclusively that this is also affecting young boys as early as 9 as well. And again, this just increases their risk for metabolic disorders and cancers. And we've got to really, as parents, if you have young children, make good choices for them, but also for yourself, and really get these endocrine disruptors out of the way.
I know it's, everybody's different, but isn't it obvious? It is for me, maybe because mom, you know, in the 70s, but like more water, right? Drink more water. You don't need all, like I worked on Wall Street. I'm not a conspiracy guy. I don't believe everybody's out to get us, but the system, we thrive in the system as an individual when we sell more stuff. That's how we accumulate money, and we associate money with, right? Like, so we sell stuff. So, but as a consumer, we don't need to consume all these things that are being sold to us. We don't need 50 different kinds of drinks or 500 kinds of drinks, or like more salad, more water, sleep more, exercise, sweat. I like cold showers. I mean, I don't like cold showers, but they do
good things for you.
Yeah. So like, and as far as intermittent fasting, I think that's just a new term that we're using. But like, I don't know. I would argue, I don't know the study, right? But I would argue for most of the time our species has been on the planet, we probably didn't have food available to us 24/7. So I would think our systems could deal with, you know, not eating all the time. And it probably helps us digest. That said, we do consume different foods now than we did for most of our existence, right? And so maybe that's playing with things too. And we probably overeat when people, that's the problem, right? You don't eat in the morning, you don't eat late at night, but then that one or two meals, you're probably stuffing your face to make up for it.
I mean, listen, I think that the only truly for women now, you know, I think it can be a slightly different story for men because of the difference in our metabolic tendencies. So women are micronutrient storers because we need an excess supply of micronutrients should we become pregnant, and for the fetal development, we need extra micronutrients. So we tend to hold on to nutrients longer, whereas men are more nutrient wasters in the sense that you don't need to hold on to things. This is like if you think about like a guy and a girl sitting at a bar, they both have one beer, right? Who's going to go to the bathroom first? It's always the guy. Why? Because your system will process that whole situation with the alcohol, the sugars, everything faster because of this tendency for nutrient wasting. But that has some benefits, especially when it comes to alcohol versus women who have to sort of have that lingering in their system a little longer. Anyway, but from an intermittent fasting point of view, for women, doing in their reproductive years now, while they are in their childbearing years, the only safe intermittent fasting that I was researching that I put in this new book is that 12-hour fast between dinner and breakfast. As soon as you move past the 13-hour mark, a lot of strange things start to happen for women around. It is actually the opposite of all those wonderful benefits. And we have to keep in mind that the studies that were done on intermittent fasting until this new one that just came out a week ago were only done on men and postmenopausal women, because for some reason, which probably has to do with a little bit of longstanding old school institutionalized gender bias from the medical, in, you know, medical fitness and nutrition research, which I don't think is purposeful, but just because there's been this, you know, belief that women's hormones are too complicated to create some sort of study, which is, you know, we now know is not true. But anyway, that intermittent fasting study done on men and postmenopausal women shows all these great benefits of intermittent fasting, right? You get improved blood sugar sensitivity, you get better cholesterol levels, better brain performance, better autophagy, right? All of these great things are happening to you when you just extend that 12-hour fast by a few hours every day. For women, in their reproductive years, the sum of the studies have been showing that it creates the opposite effect. It worsens insulin sensitivity. It decreases cognitive performance. It can disrupt thyroid levels and shrink ovaries, which if you're in your reproductive years, this is absolutely the opposite of what you want to be happening. So doing a safe 12-hour fast every day from dinner to breakfast is absolutely a great thing to do for every woman. Because like you said, we can't be eating all the time. It's terrible for you. You got to rest and digest, and you got to sleep, and you can't have your blood sugar all over the place while you're sleeping because you won't get into deep REM cycle. Your brain won't clean itself. You'll put yourself at greater risk for dementia. It's a slow and steady progression of making choices that are out of alignment with your biology, with diet and lifestyle, that lead to these bigger issues slowly over time.
No, that makes sense. So for women during their reproductive years, finish last meal at 8, next meal 8 a.m.
Yep.
Is optimal.
Gold standard, safe, studied. And I think that's important for us to understand, especially in the biohacking conversation, that women and men are obviously equal, but we're obviously also different. Biologically different, right? And so what works for men to optimize their biology is unlikely to always work for women. And this is one of the things that I uncovered as I was really looking at, Joe, you know, I've been taking care of women's hormones for 20 years, and I was really looking at why is it that 50% now of the female population is struggling with hormonal issues? You know, what's going on? And when we compare that to the male cohort, it's really not in the same galaxy. What is so fundamentally different here? Because we're all being exposed to the same endocrine disruptors. We're all being exposed to the same stressful lifestyle. Kind of most of the other things are pretty much, we're doing the same stuff with, you know, for ourselves as men and women. So I dug into the research and I found these two things. And that's what prompted me to write the second book. The first thing was, again, as I mentioned earlier, that women in the reproductive years are being left out of medical fitness and nutrition research. And that has a really problematic effect, because that means that anything that you're hearing about, oh, you know, intermittent fasting is great because look at these results. Problem is that the media is not all often saying, oh, and the study was only done on men or men and postmenopausal women. It's not giving you that disclosure. And again, I've talked to many journalists about this, and they said, oh yeah, I don't know why we're not doing that. I mean, that we should be doing that. And they're not doing it on purpose. That's for sure. It's just that we're not in the habit we just accept the study results, but the studies are always very gender biased and not including women in this reproductive category. And of course, that's the same in fitness and nutrition. So when you hear about HIIT workouts being the gold standard for building lean muscle, burning stored fat, again, I'm going to sort of blow that up in a minute, but like it totally has a different effect on men and women. And there's a reason why. And that led me to sort of look at, well, what is the root difference? What is so different? And I stumbled upon this key difference, and it's called the infradian rhythm. Women have this second biological clock that is active from their first period to their last. So for about four decades of their life, in addition to the circadian rhythm. So I'm assuming all of your listeners know about the circadian rhythm, but in case they don't, the circadian rhythm, you experience it over the course of 24 hours, right? We used to think it just governed like your sleep-wake cycle, but research over many years has really shown that it controls the timing of many nuanced bodily functions, like when your bowels are more active, when your blood pressure is more elevated, when it's less elevated, et cetera. And the timing of these things and the regulation of this timing really allows you to function normally, right? Can you imagine if you're trying to get good deep sleep and all of a sudden there's no circadian rhythm and your bowels are just randomly active at 2:45 in the morning and you got to wake up and have like a giant bowel movement, totally disruptive to your health, to your sleep, quality of life. Like it's helpful that we have this inner biological clock keeping things moving at a certain rhythm. And men's hormonal biological rhythm follows this circadian clock exactly. So I want to break down the male pattern first, then we'll get into the female infradian rhythm, if I may. So the first thing that men need to know is that the key magical thing that you need to make sure you're doing in order to unlock your wellness. I know everybody's like, what is it? Joe's like, tell me. You have to make sure that you don't interrupt your testosterone production time period. It happens from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. And you do that every night. You're going to make all the testosterone that you are going to have access to for the next 24 hours the night before. You got to get that sleep in. So a lot of men who are complaining that they feel like they're having signs of low T, you don't necessarily need to go right to the cream. What you need is to look at your sleep habits. Are you asleep at 10, getting deep sleep? And are you waking up naturally somewhere between 5 and 6 a.m. That's the key sign, because guess what gets released back into your bloodstream around between 5 and 6 a.m.? All that testosterone and your morning cortisol, right? So you should just wake up full of energy, potentially with some, you know, morning situation, right, below the belt. And all of that is a great sign for you to know that you have made testosterone, you have healthy cortisol production, and you're up and energized, right, without caffeine. And then to optimize your day, fitness-wise, work-wise, right, you're going to front load exercise, strength training, and deep work first thing in the morning. So from like 6 a.m., to noon, you want to block off that time to whatever feels good to you, do some deep work and do your strength training. Then from noon to 3, we start to have the first like descent in the concentration, blood serum concentration of testosterone and cortisol, right? And then from 3 to 6, we really drop off pretty much altogether. So this is interesting because from 12 to 3, and especially from 3 to 6, you're going to notice that you're more sensitive to your estrogen. Men produce estrogen too, just much lower levels. And all that means is that as you're more able to have your brain sort of be sensitized by this estrogen, you're just going to feel more naturally social in the afternoon, right? And it kind of lines up with how men have organized corporate culture, work culture around this male biological rhythm, right? Do your deep work in the morning, have your morning workout, some sort of lunch meeting, networking events in the afternoon, happy hour. Then you go home, you wind down, you get in the man cave, you go to bed at 10 o'clock, make your testosterone, and it's rinse and repeat every single day. Have more calories in the morning, fewer at night, medium amount in the middle of the day, every single day, every single day. And if you keep that schedule, you optimize that male biological pattern and you start to have better results with less effort, right? Both with fitness and with your productivity.
Crazy question, bold question. Sex before 10 p.m.? Does it matter?
There is optimal timing for sex for men. And it's in the morning, obviously, when you have that surge of testosterone. So anytime before noon for a guy is optimal for you. I would say for women who sometimes feel frustrated that after 10 o'clock, a man, or even after 8 o'clock really at night, a man is a little less, or your man is a little less interested or pursuing of you or even responsive, do not take that personally. Be aware of his biological hormonal pattern, as we are going to ask him, again, if you guys are in heterosexual relationships, we're going to ask him to be aware of yours. We have to be allies for each other to optimize our biology, right? I have a husband. I pretty much know after 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, I'm not going to really like approach him, often for this type of activity, because it's just not optimal for him. And then of course it's not going to be optimal for me. And I don't take that personally. It's just a fact, biological fact. I'm not going to get hung up on it.
All right. Now this is awesome. Now give me the female clock.
So the female clock is the infradian clock. We also have the circadian, right? So we actually have two clocks, and that's actually, let's say from a quantum physics point of view, something that I would argue has to do somehow with the fact that we 3D print the tiny human beings. But anyway, that sort of existential thought aside, this infradian clock, we experience it over the course of our monthly cycle, approximately 28 days. Again, like it would be too simplistic now to think that the circadian rhythm only governs your sleep-wake cycle, when we know it governs so many more nuanced functionings of your system. The infradian rhythm for women doesn't just govern when they're ovulating and when they're menstruating. It governs our brain, our metabolism, our microbiome, our stress response system, our immune system, and our reproductive system, which comprises of our periods, our sex drive, and our fertility. So it's really important that women understand that because we've been left out of that research, all the things that you've been trying all these years to optimize, to get those results that have been promised to you by the studies that have been showing these results in men, and you're not getting them, that 100% has to do with the fact that they are not including this biological rhythm into the research and into the suggestions, right? They're optimizing that circadian pattern, which again, really works better for the male biological rhythm. So how does it affect? Let's break down just two of the pieces for women. We're going to talk about how the infradian rhythm affects your metabolism and how it affects your stress response system. And we're going to look at nutrition and fitness, what needs to be different, right? Because for men, it's the same thing, same time of day, every day. The assumption that you've been told is that, you know, women are just smaller versions of men and therefore with slower metabolism. So we have to like restrict calories more and work out harder every day and hope we will get those results. Just not scientifically accurate and, you know, illogical once you hear what I'm about to tell you. So your metabolism is modulated by this infradian rhythm, meaning in the first half of your cycle, the follicular and ovulatory phases, your metabolism is slower. You need fewer calories. In the second half of your cycle, luteal and menstrual phases, the metabolism speeds up, and studies show you need 279 more calories per day. Fact. How you feel about that is irrelevant. If you don't front load your diet in the luteal phase with those calories, guess what you will do later in the day, not even realizing? You will binge eat garbage, right? Because your body needs those calories however it can get them. And ghrelin as a neurotransmitter is way too powerful for you to resist with willpower, right? So you need those calories. Metabolism is different. So even just this whole idea that you would keep a steady caloric intake each and every day is outdated and is only relevant for men. Right? Because outdated for women, but is completely relevant for men. You have to keep a steady caloric intake every day if you have testicles. If you have ovaries, You have to modulate your caloric intake across the cycle as this infradian rhythm takes effect on your metabolism, period, full stop, end of story. Doing anything else is illogical and will disrupt your endocrine system, because if you don't have enough calories, you're going to have hypoglycemia, your cortisol is going to get elevated, you're going to disrupt ovulation, you're going to disrupt progesterone, you're going to have PMS, and that's just within the first month. If we keep doing that month over month, now we have PMS, now we can have menstrual disturbances, now we can have low sex drive, now we can have infertility, et cetera, right? And this is just by disrupting this one, or not aligning with this one factor of the infradian rhythm. I'm only a little passionate about this. Let's move on to the stress response and fitness. In the first half of the cycle, follicular and ovulatory, the resting cortisol levels are slightly lower, which means it's optimal for you to do cardio and high intensity interval training. Doing this coupled with the slower metabolism, the slightly lower calorie intake, and the lower resting cortisol creates a perfect internal environment coupled with that higher intensity workout for you to build lean muscle quickly, efficiently, and without injury, and use stored fat as fuel. Wonderful. That's what we want. That is biohacking at its best. In the second half, luteal phase, menstrual phase, as soon as you cross over ovulation, studies are conclusive that you must not engage in high intensity interval training or heavy cardio. If you do, and you continue to restrict calories, you're going to turn on muscle wasting and turn on fat storage. Not optimal biohacking, right? So what do you do instead? You eat those 279 more calories a day. You keep your blood sugar stable. You don't continue to elevate cortisol, and you do strength training without a cardio component. And it's a long phase, right? We got two halves of the month. All the conditioning that you have received, you're going to think, oh my gosh, if I'm not doing my cardio every day, I'm going to gain fat. Within one cycle, you're going to see the difference that you have been missing all your life. Because once, and again, I've maintained a 60-pound weight loss for 20 years. I also was able to restore my same weight level postpartum, again, using this methodology. And by the way, the U.S. women's soccer team trains their female athletes based on this. So you got to get up to speed with this is how your biology works. You got to train yourself in this modulated way, because this is what's happening internally. Within one cycle, you're going to have this different effect. Like every woman I know I have ever spoken to, they'll have this comment like, gosh, it's kind of like a scratching head comment. Like, oh, you know, I'm so dedicated. I have strong willpower. I show up every day. I work out hard. I push myself even when I don't feel like it. And at the end of the month, you know, I'm just not making any real big gains, you know, big progress in the way that I want to. And that has to do with the fact that in the first half of the month, you were making progress, and then you undid it in the second half by continuing to use this outdated information that you should eat the same caloric value every day and work out at the same intensity every day. It just doesn't work.
So basically, the first half of the month, you use the Peloton. The second half of the month, you lift the Peloton.
Great. You know what I mean? Anything you can do, Pilates. There's a chart in Woman Code. There's a food chart in In the Flow. There's a food chart in Chapter 4. There's a fitness chart in Chapter 5. And then in Chapter 6, there's this really exciting chart about your time management, because just like men can take advantage of the hormonal effects on their brain, their cognitive performance and productivity, women can do the same thing. In 1996, Dr. Catherine Woolley discovered at Northwestern University that the female brain changes 25% over the course of this infradian rhythm. And so, you know, you can play to your cognitive strengths every phase of the month if you know how to do it. And so I actually built the first time management system that incorporates for women both the infradian and the circadian pattern, so that you can really not just dial in your fitness and nutrition, but also really dial in your stress management, right? Because how you're planning all your projects and your life stuff really does feed back into your stress. So this whole method that I just described for you, aligning your food, your fitness, and your projects, your time management with your infradian rhythm, it are the three pillars of the method that I created called the cycle syncing method. And all of that is described in the new book, In the Flow.
You're awesome. Let's end it with just tell us quickly what you when you found what you found. You went to the doctor. The doctor was like, I don't know. What did you do? Is this exactly what you did? And then all of a sudden you saw the change?
So what I did first was I did the first steps in the flow protocol, right? Where I really deeply cleaned up my endocrine disruptors. So, you know, it's really about keeping that blood sugar stable, addressing, you know, adrenal overstimulation, and then really healing, you know, and improving estrogen metabolism, gut health. Those are the three key cleanup or triage pieces of the flow protocol. And then once you've done that, you can't stay in triage forever, right? You can't do a detox forever. You have to then move into a maintenance plan. And then once you have your hormones restored and balanced, then the maintenance plan that makes sense is aligning with the infradian rhythm. And that's what this cycle syncing method is. So yes, I've done both, and you'd have to do them in a particular order, depending on your situation. So if you're listening and you're thinking, okay, I don't have PCOS or fibroids or any of these other major conditions, I just have some garden variety PMS and I'm not getting the results with my fitness regime that I want, the cycle syncing method is perfect for you because it's going to give you those gains. You can learn more at thecyclesyncingmembership.com and in the book. If you're someone who, you know, has been having menstrual disturbances, you've been diagnosed with something, the first thing you want to do is pick up Woman Code, go through that process, come to Flow Living, do a one-on-one telehealth coaching session with one of our coaches, do the monthly flow program, and get that issue addressed so that you can move into your forever, during your reproductive years, maintenance lifestyle of the cycle syncing method. And I want to touch on one last factor for women, especially if you're trying to optimize your fitness and your performance, which is birth control, synthetic birth control. This is something that you should just be aware that actually really depletes your micronutrient levels, shuts off your infradian rhythm, disrupts your microbiome, causes you to store fat, lose lean muscle, disrupts, you know, even just who you are at a brain level. And so it's important to just be aware of that if you're struggling with issues and you're not really being, you know, thrilled about being on that medication. You should know that there are other options. And certainly if you do want to stay on them, make sure you're taking good quality supplements. I formulated a set to help women with these issues, and you can find that at the website too.
You're awesome. Thanks for doing this. I learned more about women on this podcast. I should have, before I got married and had daughters, I should have spoken to you.
But I think every man I ever talk to has this same beautiful, generous reaction of like, I really wish I had known this, because what you're saying is it would be so great to know the formula of how the people that I love work, just like I know the formula of how I work, right? Because then we can interact with each other in more supportive ways. And by the way, in the book, we go into relationships, sex, motherhood. How do you optimize, you know, all of those things, really understanding this infradian rhythm effect, and how can you empower your partner to really be there with you on that journey?
I love it. I love it. And I'm going to reach out to you too, because I'm putting together a book. I'll talk to you offline. I think you can give me a one page chart. That would be really interesting for the book.
Awesome.
This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Inside Tracker, the ultra personalized nutrition and wellness platform that analyzes data from your blood. Go to InsideTracker.com and save 33% with the code SpartanUp.